It is Saturday, September 1st, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, social networking is cool, but is there any money in it? Plus, this week in geek news.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. On this episode of GeekSpeak, we'll be discussing monetizing social networking with IDC analyst Kristen Vita. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join the conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Welcome to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, a Slacker geek and student. Morning.
Good morning.
Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Good morning.
Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA.
Good morning.
We also have Karsten in. And Karsten, if you'd like to speak with us during the news, you're welcome to do so. Hi, Karsten.
Hello. Karsten who?
Vita.
Nice.
Yeah, he got it right this time.
We actually have had Karsten on before in March, and I think I butchered his name 15 times during that show, so... Karsten Vita. I think I have it tattooed now on my arm. In any case, let's start the news off. Ryder.
Well, good morning. Okay. I thought was interesting is that AT&T is going to pull a plug on 767, you know, any four numbers, popcorn they call it in Northern California. They have a different number for Southern California. I think it's...
This is the call time number?
Yeah, call time. You know, just, it's like it's your old standby that you have the nice ladies... predictable voice, you know, beep, beep.
Is it still running right now?
It's still running right now. They haven't pulled the plug. I guess only Nevada and California still have it running. All the other states, at least that AT&T has influence on, it's pulled the plug on. And it was a nice little write-up about it that I found, and they talked about kind of the history of it. It's actually kind of this big machine that has like this two discs on it and these sub-discs, and it's a very mechanical device that's been in existence for a long time. And
wouldn't it be extremely inexpensive to run this service? I mean, it's just a phone number and a computer.
You know, I think it's more about the phone numbers that it eats up.
Doesn't it just one phone number in every area code?
No, it's a whole series. I think they're talking about 300,000 phone numbers because it's the first three digits and then any last four numbers. And they have a version for Northern California and Southern California.
Will they keep any one of the phones up?
I think they're just going to pull it. I mean, they're basically saying that, you know, there are far more reliable and readily available sources to get accurate time. You have the, you know, network time protocol on the network system.
Yeah,
you have cell phone networks have automatic time.
Yeah, but,
So they're I don't know. I haven't seen an exact date when they're going to pull the plug, but...
So start using it now to enjoy yourself
You know, I actually use it with my daughter just for her to listen to somebody play on the phone. It's a free call locally, and, you know, I just dial it up and let her,
if you don't
talk
know what
to
we're
the
talking
phone
about,
lady.
Yeah, if you don't know what you're talking about, pick up your phone and dial popcorn, and you'll get the time.
If you're in Northern California, if you're in Southern California, it's like... what is it? Does anybody from Southern California know what it was?
Sorry, I'm not a slave.
It's 853 and then 84 numbers.
Now I'm tempted. I wonder if we can do this on there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. Oh, there's dial tone. Something didn't work there.
Hit the dial a 9 first?
Dial 9?
No, not here at the station, I don't think so. Yeah.
Anyway, so kind of a sad day. I mean, it's been an icon for me. I've always used it as a kid, and... you know, I can see that it's going to be, you know, kind of obsolete. I mean, all my computers, I can sync up with, you know, time services and You know, I rarely need to call it for that purpose anymore.
Actually, you ever notice that the Windows Time Sync service never works?
Yeah, it's like 50% of the time it never works for me.
It doesn't work any of my machines.
Really?
And they offer a couple different options. None of them ever work.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Always works on Linux.
Yeah.
Works on Mac, too.
The Time Sync stuff doesn't work on Windows?
It does. It's just funky.
It's hard to set up. It's probably better in Vista. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ryder.
It's probably blocked.
Oh, it's probably a firewall issue.
Yeah. You know, some port they
I'd
use.
Like to get that going. I love being able to sync my computer so that the time's always right. It's wonderful. All right, let's go to the next news story. Miles, go ahead.
Sure. There's some controversy in the Windows Vista world with regard to network performance while you're playing music. Now, over 10 years ago, folks were able to play MP3 files, and that was on your 486. DX2 66 or 486 DX4 100s, relatively slow speed computer. But what they're finding now with Vista machines, with these, even with multi-core CPUs that are going 3 gigahertz plus, while you are playing audio, the network will drop in performance in some cases by as much as 75% to 80%. I'm sorry, to 80% to 85%. And people were wondering why this is. And the biggest, the most likely culprit is the digital rights management, the DRM.
Mm-hmm.
That everything that, all audio, all media that goes through the system is being checked in real time to see if it has copywritten data or has a stamp on it. And it is seriously degrading performance.
Do you mean that you can take, you can do like, inside the audio file, not say the file like handle, but the actual audio itself, there's some kind of signature in there that you've got to detect? Kind of like a fingerprint?
Basically.
So that takes a lot of processing time because you've got to read the whole file in and then try to analyze it for this fingerprint?
But it's curious that it's processing time, because if it were just processing time, that would mean, okay, you get a spike whenever you're playing it, but this is also affecting network performance. There are large series of IRQ requests apparently going through that's bogging down the CPU, and it's not able to catch up and handle packet requests.
And you think this is because of the DRM, is what people say?
That's the best theory that people have, because it is happening. It's now been confirmed.
Okay, so how do you confirm something like this, that the machine is doing things outside what Windows XP did?
Well, you make a file transfer. You have an XP machine, you have a Vista machine, and you make a file transfer from, say, a file server.
You're copying a CD image, whatever.
And at the same time, as you're checking to see how long it takes, or you check to see how long it takes just as a baseline, then you try doing it a second time, but this time you play an MP3 file.
What, at the same time?
Right, as you're transferring, and then see how long it takes.
And is it affecting it?
Yes.
Wow. That's weird. I mean, you'd think that... So it must be something at the kernel level of the operating system that's doing this, that's slowing everything down. I mean, earlier you have a very isolated task there. All right, well, that's pretty interesting.
Microsoft has responded to it, saying what they're seeing is expected behavior,
mm-hmm.
which is what makes people lead them to believe it's DRM. It's something that some extra items they're putting into the stack, into the list of items.
Into the operating system itself.
Right.
Well, that's kind of it's kind of disheartening. The skepticism I have with this is that a lot of people that do analyzing and such have this kind of, hacker attitude that Microsoft is bad. So these stories normally are like, are you sure? But if Microsoft's responding that yes, it's expected, then...
Well, some of the behavior, the extreme nature of it, they're saying there's some stuff that they weren't expecting and they need to work on that, but they weren't overly surprised and they haven't said, oh no, what are you talking about? We have great performance. You just have a messed up system. There is a dramatic slowdown in playing MP3s, even the ones that are non-encumbered, not the ones that do not have a copyright on it. I'm not talking about if you download R. Kelly's album and try playing it. I mean, if you make your own recordings, it will also slow down.
Anytime MP3 is doing. Is this MP3 library Microsoft's, or is it some other open source plugin?
It's not open source.
Okay, it's Microsoft's whatever it is.
They may have licensed it. Some third party may have written it, and they may have bought the but rights to it.
It's a black box, though.
Right.
Just source code.
Oh, it's absolutely a black box.
All right. Well, Miles, thank you very much for that update of the story. That's basically about Vista running slower and possibly because of DRM with networking and processor usage.
Networking and playing audio at the same time.
Networking and playing audio at the same time. So if you're
now, the audio can also include video as well. Because right. The video has an audio portion.
Sure,
itself,
sure.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much, Miles, for that update. Sean, I believe it's your turn for news, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Earthlink's Wi-Fi, San Francisco dreams. I don't know. Sounds like they're going away.
Oh, no.
So they just laid off half its total workforce, and they've pulled out of the whole initiative to provide San Francisco free Wi-Fi.
They being Earthlink.
Right? Earthlink.
Yeah.
I didn't know Earthlink was actually doing that initiative. I just knew that San Francisco had Wi-Fi. So do you know why?
Well, according to CEO Rolla Huff, he said the reason's really simple. They've had some solid quarters, but they've had a sinking stock price. They need to return the value to their shareholders. So this means they need to cut jobs, which is a quick way to do that.
Because
mm-hmm. shareholders love cuts, job cuts. And they're pulling out of this initiative because it just, I guess, the model for them, the way they see it, is just not going to work. So they're going to continue to scale networks where money is already spent, but they don't plan to deploy new capital on this strategy under the old business model. That's what they said.
This is falling close.
What do you think, Karsten?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the deal with between Earthlink and the city of San Francisco was that they would like pick up all the upfront investment for all the wireless routers that you need and all the bandwidth, and then afterwards they would recoup the money by selling subscriptions to people. And they just don't have the capital anymore because they don't make as much money anymore as they used to.
Yeah, without that income from subscriptions, you know, the internet's changed. Once you get connectivity, you don't need a subscription service to connect. I'm really surprised AOL does well.
They're doing not that well with regard to access business.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the business model for them that they're failing on. They were planning on offering free wireless for San Francisco. They were offering that, and now they feel like they can't because it's too expensive. How are they ever going to recoup any revenue?
Oh, here's the deal. It was a deal between the city of San Francisco on the one hand, and on the other hand, it was Google and Earthlink. Google would provide a free wireless service, and Earthlink would provide a faster subscription-based service.
On the same network.
They still stand by their deal, but Earthlink says, you know, the upfront investment, we just can't afford it anymore.
Okay. Gotcha.
Now, you were mentioning there's some really interesting business opportunities for a world that is fully connected to the internet. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I mean, if you really have internet access anywhere, anytime, no matter where you are, there's a whole lot of applications that you could do that you can't do today. For instance, today you have maybe like 4 or 5 radio stations in San Francisco that you can listen to in a car. But with a ubiquitous wireless network, you can listen to anything. I mean, I could listen to, being a German, I could listen to German news radio if I wanted to. So there's a whole lot of new business sectors that you could open up with that.
Yeah, this is what Google's looking at with the 700 megahertz spectrum, right?
Well, that's a different story. That's really about mobile phones. They have a hard time to... Here's the deal. With mobile phone and the internet, the carriers such as Verizon and AT&T and Sprint and all those guys, they hold a very great control over what people can access on their mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the stuff that you do access on a mobile phone goes through the DEC, the list of sites that are pre-installed. And if Google wants to be there, they have to cut a deal with those carriers and they have to pay dearly for it. And they hate that, of course.
But if that spectrum becomes free and it offers connectivity with the right hardware, anybody could tap into that, right?
That's correct. You could tap into it using mobile devices such as mobile phones or similar devices.
And hence the talk of the Google phone.
Yeah.
That's correct. Which I don't think is actually going to happen, but we'll see.
Do you think that Google is going to win this 700 megahertz purchase that goes on to auction?
I don't think they're that serious about it. Uh-huh. I think they are. This is more about lobbying and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make the point that, well, access is not free these days. It's controlled by the carriers. But if it was free, it would be better for everyone. Open standard, open access, all those good things. And that's really the point that they want to make, I believe.
Right. But the court turned them down on that decision, or the the deciding body decided not to give them the open access that they'd asked for.
Well, this is about the FCC auctioning off a new frequency spectrum sometime in the future. And they said, well, we're going to bid for it, but only if open access is provided. And I think the FCC turned that down.
Yeah, they did. Covered that last week. Okay, thank you very much. Let's see the next news story.
By the way, this also falls on the heels of Chicago. They had a municipal Wi-Fi plan, and that fell apart as well recently.
Because of the same type of reasons? Too expensive to implement?
Right.
Like a direct revenue source? Well, that's kind of disheartening. You're listening to Geek Speak. The geeks are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Ryder Brooks. Karsten Weide is an IDC analyst and his recent report, which just was released, is Social Networking Services in the United States, Popular, Yes, But How to Monetize Them. It's all about these social networks like MySpace and YouTube and so on that provide let's let you describe what a social network and what sites were in and what sites were out of this analysis that you did.
Well, that's actually a very good question to begin with, because nobody really knows what a social network really is. So, it's all over the place. So the first thing we did was we made a big list of 60 websites that are commonly referred to as social networks and compared the features that they had. And they really only had two things in common. Number one is you can put yourself out there as a normal person. You can publish it, your profiles page or pictures or videos or blog articles.
You have a virtual face. You come to be as a virtual person.
You can publish as an average person. You don't have to be a media professional anymore. And number two is you can communicate with other people who do the same thing on that particular service. And this is really what social networking is all about. But these two things, publishing and communicating, what it really means is you, as a normal person, as a normal consumer, you can publish. You don't have to be a journalist anymore. You don't have to be a producer anymore. You don't have to be a director anymore. You can publish, and it's very simple.
Okay, and I would normally include things like ranking and voting on certain things so that my participation goes above and beyond just representing myself, but I start to modify the social networking by judging other things. Adding in tags to something to say that I categorize these this way, or going up to and writing a review about a book on Amazon, my participation adds to the network in general.
Correct.
Is that part of it as well?
Yes, correct. We count it anything that where you put out anything. User-generated
content.
Correct. If you review a book on Amazon, that counts. If you tag something, that counts.
Isn't this a very large space? If you define the social networking like that, isn't it a very large space?
It is a very large space. In fact, almost every service today has some kind of social networking functionality.
Right.
And so we see that. So what we then did is we cut this big cake down into segments and looked at, well, what are really genuine social networks, true social networks? And then you come up with things like Facebook or MySpace, which are really designed to build and maintain social relations.
Almost like that's the only reason for them is social networking.
Exactly.
Even though Amazon's doing a great job of using social networking concepts, their store is their primary focus.
For instance, YouTube is not a true social network. We do count it as sort of a lesser social network.
Because they've added all these features in that's made it more like a social network.
Yeah, it's really been designed to upload videos and share them. It's not been designed to build and maintain a social network.
They're adding them in, though. I mean, they're doing... But I get what you're saying. Like, one of the things that Facebook or MySpace or Friendster does is you connect up with other people. You define other people having a relationship with you.
Correct.
That's a big part of it. So you're the MySpace idea, for example, that you have a certain amount of friends, and that's your local social networking. We have a regular listener in Amsterdam, and he was really concerned when I kind of invited him to LinkedIn, which is another one of those professional, because it kind of scared him how much this company had information about him, his resume and all these things. He decided to join in anyway, and I've joined, and I think all the geeks have LinkedIn pages. Do you have a LinkedIn page too? Okay. What do you think about that aspect of the privacy issue, where this giant network's emerging, but a corporation owns all the information about it?
I think it's I'm of two minds of that. On the one hand, there are privacy concerns. My biggest concern is that many of these companies will not be diligent enough to protect those data from other people hacking in and stealing them. So I still go out of my way to not upload any credit card information or anything that could really hurt me if anybody else got it, you know. On the other hand, these personal data allow for a lot of functionality that otherwise wouldn't be possible. For instance, as on LinkedIn, professional networking. So I can actually go out and look for other people who are working on a particular issue, and I can contact them. And mm-hmm. that's great. It's much faster, much easier than it used to be.
Yeah. All right. So you take these whole bunch of different sites that kind of have social networking. Your tier one sites are really you have three tiers, but the tier one is really, we define this as a social network. That's what its core feature is. And I'm assuming because there's no other direct revenue model like a bookstore or something, that's the real focus on how do you make money? How does a company or corporation make money on this? And we saw MySpace was bought by – every one of these that's been purchased has been purchased with a lot of money.
For a lot of money, yes.
I mean, do you recall what MySpace was purchased?
MySpace was purchased for, I believe, $580 million. YouTube, being a tier two social network, was purchased for $1.6 billion. A lot of money.
Yeah. So, and it's always kind of shocking because we don't see a revenue path directly. Now, Google finally started making some money on YouTube, where they're adding a ticker advertising at the bottom, and hopefully they're going to be able to make enough revenue to keep YouTube running profitably. What about MySpace or LinkedIn? How are they making money?
Well, the major model to make money on social networks is advertising. The problem is if you go out to these social networks, MySpace or Facebook or YouTube for that matter, there's not a whole lot of advertising out there yet. And the question is, why is that? And for the most part, the reason is that they are not what we call brand safe. Let's say you are General Motors and you want to run ads on a website. You want to make sure that your ads don't run on a website where you will find illicit content. Something that might be racist or sexist, or it might be stolen content, which you will still find on YouTube. You don't want your content to run against that. And that's why you find little brand ads on services like that.
Okay. Why does a company not want to run on places like that?
Because it would be bad PR for them. It would be would taint their reputation.
So the headline would be GM sponsors pornography.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Which is not...
It's just an example.
Well, is that real difficult for the social networking to say, you know what, it's not going to be like that? How is it hard for them to control that? What happens?
Well, technically, it's fairly easy to control. There's a number of ways that you can do that. I can tell you more about that later on if you want. But the problem is, if they do control what users can upload to a social network, it becomes less attractive for the users. These sites are hugely popular. I mean, it's crazy how popular they are with users. And it's precisely because they can upload what they want. And once they can't anymore, the popularity will go away, which was what attracted advertisers in the first place.
Is that why we're seeing the advertising on those sites being kind of... They're not the big companies. They're these like kind of small outfits that are selling... ringtones for your phone and things like that?
Yes, that's precisely the reason. It's the advertisers that we call the long-tail advertisers. It's the advertisers, smaller companies, mid-sized companies that you would also find on search engines. And you're missing the big brand companies, which, of course, spend most of the marketing dollars.
Now, on YouTube, Google owns that now. Google has a very successful advertising base. In the March 3rd show, if you like Karsten Vida, go ahead and go to our website, geekspeak.org, and click on the show page and the archive page, whatever, and go see the March 3rd of 2007. It's a whole show. They talked about how these businesses, the large websites are making money. But one of the things we talked about was Google's ad revenue from their text advertising that's just everywhere. Why aren't they running that on YouTube, or are they?
They are. But that's not really where the big bucks are. I mean, there is a lot of money in search ads and in context ads is what uh-huh. they're called. But if you want to sort of get into new segments of business, brand advertising is where it's at, and that they can't really target that right now with social networks.
Do you think this is just because those corporations are squeamish about that, or do you think there's a real danger for them from a PR perspective?
I think there's a real danger. The simple matter that all of them act that way means that it's a serious issue for them.
Interesting. What about just the general public understanding what social networking is, so that when someone comes out with a, they don't come out with a story saying this corporation sponsor, you know, putting advertising on a porn site. Instead, they say this company's on a social networking, and the social networking has some people that are doing these things. I mean, do you think there's a way that the general public could be aware of what a social networking is, so that it wouldn't be offensive to them that GM was putting their ads on there?
I think it's too complicated to.
It sounded complicated as I tried to say it. Geek Speaks is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You're listening to Geek Speak. We are now taking your questions with comments, questions and comments of technology, but I'd like to stay on topic. Let's talk about social networking and how money's made online through social networking. So if you'd like to participate in the conversation, please feel free to give us a call. Rick Philman is awaiting your phone call, 476-2800, 476-2800, that is, or toll-free anywhere in California, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, Ryder Brooks, Karsten Vita, and we are taking your questions and comments of technology about social networking and online marketing and making money online in general. You got ideas about how to do it, or you got some frustrations about MySpace, or you think it's fascinating and you want to add some contribution to the show, please give us a call, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. Okay, so what we were just talking about, I lost my train of thought with all that stuff I had to read.
Oh, brand safety.
Brand safety, yeah.
That's right.
Now, okay, so couldn't it be done such that certain users said, you know what, my area is not going to have any offensive material, and is that a possibility?
Well, that's what the services are trying to do. So YouTube, for instance, will try exactly that. They will retain what they have, which I would call sort of the Wild West section, where users can do whatever they want. And then they're going to have an additional section where, on the same service, though, where they will publish what we call premium content, i.e. professional content. TV shows, movies, news and sports clips.
But the real definition is trusted content versus unknown.
Correct. And that on those... In this section, they will sell ads, and they hope companies like General Motors or Colgate, Palmolive will not have a hard time to buy advertising space.
All right. And is that why you're still seeing commercials on, if you go to NBC and watch some of their television shows that are online, you see commercials in there, the big guys. You go to YouTube and they're not there because NBC is controlling that content completely and the relationship is safe.
That's correct. Well, that's one reason. Of course, as you may know, I mean, there have been negotiations between Google/YouTube on the one end and all those content providers such as NBC Universal and Viacom and Walt Disney and you name them. And the talks have broken down because these content providers felt that Google didn't give them a good enough deal on the advertising.
Interesting. All right. Well, what other models could a site use to make money in these social networking environments?
Well, interestingly there, first of all, let me take a step back. What we think is that these sites will employ a mixture of business models. It's not just going to be advertising. It's also going to be e-commerce, i.e. online shopping, and also subscriptions, which is, I think, very interesting because until very recently, the common wisdom on the internet was, well, users are really not willing to pay anything for any service online. They expect it to be all free. Mm-hmm. And with social networks, we see that changing. So we see services such as classmates.com, where you have to pay, I believe it's like $4 or $5 a month as a subscription fee to be able to use that social network. Or you upload photos and manage them on Flickr and share them with friends and relatives. And you have to pay, I think it's $25 a year to use it.
But that's a premium version. They have a free version, and then you have to kind of upgrade your
camera. Well, that's actually the tricky part of it. You can use it for free, but once you really professionally want to use that service, let's say You want to upload all of your pictures that you have on your machine to Flickr. You can only upload 100 a month. So it would take you forever to upload all your pictures. So you're going to upgrade to premium right away, because then you can upload in bulk. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do. I mean, you get sort of a low-down basic version, which, well, I guess it works sort of. But if you really want to seriously use it, you have to upgrade to premium.
And is that working for Flickr?
Working for Flickr, it's working for WebShots, which is a CNET property, working for classmates.com, working for a number of other sites. So we believe that that's going to be a part of the overall money that social networks are going to make.
I have a general dislike of the class website one. What's it called?
Classmates.com.
I don't like it, and the reason I don't like it is that there's advertising all the time, and it feels like a kind of spammy company. I just don't have a trust with them.
You know what? I felt the same way. I mean, obviously, I used like 60 different social networks in the working for this document. So I also tried classmates.com, and I felt it was kind of, sort of choppy and a lot of disruption. But it's really popular. They have been around forever. They have been around longer than Yahoo has been around on the web. They have been profitable for many years. They have no more competition from other services such as Facebook or MySpace. But they have made good money. It's not like it's a huge amount, but they're making good money.
One of the things that makes these social networkings work so well is that the barrier to entry is very low. Like, anybody can go and make a MySpace account or any of these sites. They can go and do that. And that's why it's kind of appealing to start doing that. And the reason it works then is that it kind of has to have a mass of users to create that social aspect. I recently tried a new service that was kind of social networking, and none of my friends joined, and so I don't use it. You know, it's one of those things. And I think there's kind of a cap at how many you want to be a part of. I'm probably a part of 5 or 6, and it feels a little overwhelming to me. I'm not actually active in any of them because it's kind of overwhelming. How does that fit in the models of these sites?
Well, first of all, you bring up an interesting question, which is the network effect. A social network has to have a particular, let's say, minimum amount of users to be useful for users. If you turn it around, that's an upside for networks who manage to corner a particular niche, like LinkedIn, for instance. It's pretty much the only professional network service that is worth joining these days, because there's so many users on it, and if you are looking for a professional network, you're not going to like a small one where you can't find anyone. You're going to go to LinkedIn. So once you have like 70-80% of the market, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's true. The second question that you brought up was, I'm a member of 5 or 6 networks, and I can't really use any single one of them because it's just too many.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big issue. So we also looked at the question whether there's technology or services that sort of integrate all those services, that you have one single interface to several services. But that's still totally in its infancy. There's no standards at all. There's a couple of services that do that, but it's still pretty clunky and it's not really consumer grade services.
All right. Let's go ahead, and I'm going to invite people to call in with questions or comments of the geeks. If you guys got questions or comments for Karsten about his new report about social networking, monetizing them, the phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Karsten, I have an issue about the general idea of how these things work. You're setting up a network. The network's the most important thing on this, and yet a corporation owns that network to some degree. I mean, MySpace is the only one that really controls that network, and they could take it down pretty quickly, and you'd have to recreate it somewhere else. I mean, they're controlling that. And to me, a corporation controlling a social networking network seems a really kind of offensive, yet I use them. What about that aspect?
Well, it's true. It gives these companies a whole lot of control, in particular over marketing. Because if they know a lot about you, then they can target advertising ever more precisely to you. Some services, they have a lot of demographic information about you. They know how you behave online. They create what they call click streams. And if they find that you are looking at a lot of automotive pages, they're like, maybe this guy's out in the market to buy a new car. And then you get all these car ads. So it gives them a lot of control, and it is kind of scary. I agree with that. What I also find, though, is that it seems to be the level of acceptance of this on the user side is sort of a generational thing. So I think my generation is sort of, I'm 40 plus. We go out of our way to not give anyone personal information about ourselves. Now, when I talk to our young intern, she's like 24, and she's like, yeah, I'm all on all these social networks. I'm putting out all of this information. They don't feel bad about it at all. They are very comfortable doing that. So maybe we see a cultural shift that's here to stay.
Ryder, Miles, Sean, and Karsten, my name's Lyle Troxell. We're all talking about social networking. You're welcome to call in and ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is Geek Speak on KUSP.
Do you have any thoughts on Second Life, that particular
social networking site? Yeah, I was going to ask about that, too.
Well, we don't really count it as a social network because it's not relating to the real world. So that's what's sort of our cutoff point. So Second World or there.com, we count those. Of course, that said, Second Life there has been a whole lot of buzz around it, a lot of media coverage. And we think it's mostly buzz. In business terms, there's not such a lot there. Some companies have set up sort of virtual shops on Second Life. And I think most of the PR they're getting for that is through the press release where they can say, oh, we're now on Second Life. And I don't think there's a whole lot of effect that they have on Second Life proper.
It's funny that you say the ones that are real social networks and one that deal with real life and ones that, like Second Life, which is alternate personality, alternate lifestyle. Because I had never really thought of MySpace as being the real world. I never really, because people are constantly putting up their impressions of themselves. Yes, they have a lot of them that people put up themselves. But there's also a lot of people impersonating other people.
But
there's
your impression of yourself, even in the real world, if you wear a costume all the time, that is you. I mean,
but isn't that what Second Life is saying? I want to have this alternate life.
Miles, MySpace is huge to the music industry. Small band.
Which is very much real life. Yeah,
are getting a lot more play through MySpace, and they're actually selling their music through MySpace and getting a lot more interest. And it's not just music. There are other, entities out there who are actually doing business on MySpace. It seems like everyone's making a MySpace page now whenever they have a new business.
Actually, right? I have a question for you guys. So what I hear in the industry, so that MySpace is sort of aging now, and it's sort of losing its buzz and losing its steam a little bit.
Yeah.
And Facebook is sort of the up-and-coming network. Do you see that the same way?
Yeah, I'd say I see that the same way. Now, I'm in a university, so I can have, I was able to create a MySpace or a Facebook site pretty quickly. I think from the youth that I know, the college kids that I know, they're definitely moving over to Facebook. But my perspective on that, from a web developer perspective, is that it's just a cleaner, faster interface without as many ads. That's how I feel about it. It just feels messy on MySpace, and kind of like a bazaar instead of a mall. That's kind of the difference. Though it's kind of exciting. I'm done playing time.
That it seems like whenever other people get into these spaces who are not the founding, generation. Because a lot of younger kids, high school, so on, they got into MySpace, and they didn't like the fact that their parents were looking at MySpace or creating their own page, or people older than them were creating their own page. All of a sudden, it was not the same thing to them. It's like Burning Man. There are a lot of new stories out there now talking about how it's just not the same.
Speaking of Burning Man, we didn't handle that as a story. Burning Man was burned early as a prank this year.
Yeah,
on the first day. And I've heard that last night from you, Sean.
So there's a lot of stories about, Burning Man's not the same. I'm glad this happened to them. They needed a wake-up call, that sort of thing. It's just the same thing with MySpace, Now there's Facebook. I just wonder how there's got to be a lifespan for these. Did you guys look into that?
Well, that's the big question is really the starting point for this research was, there's such a lot of media coverage for social networks. What about this hype and buzz is really real? What is to stay and what is going to go away? But we think that it's here to stay. When I learned during this research that almost two-thirds of all American internet users now use social networks, that's an amazing share of users who use these services. And the younger the users are, I mean, the kids spend a lot of time on these services. Mm-hmm. So we believe that if those services add more functionality, they become more useful in real-world terms, and they're not just toys, then they're here to stay, and they will have a big influence on how people use the Internet in the future.
But that also, bringing up what you were talking about, there's also the aspect of kids aren't necessarily using their computer to access these social networking sites. More and more it's the cell phones, right? Or mobile.
Oh yeah, that's another aspect of the internet is that in the future so today about a third of all American internet users use mobile devices to access the internet in some way or another. It's mostly email, but also instant messaging, less other things. But we think like in the next 5 years that's gonna go up to 2/3 of all users will use the internet via a mobile device. So it's gonna really change. We really gotta have to say goodbye to the notion that the personal computer is the main access point to the internet. So, and especially the kids are big at using mobile devices to access services.
Okay. I know this is a little off topic, but why are these mobile devices taking so long to saturate in the United States? I mean, 8 years ago when we started GeekSpeak, when we started taking over GeekSpeak, we were talking about phones that had web page support, like you could view pages on them. And yet still, it's only a very small market that do any kind of web surfing or any kind of use of services other than email.
I don't even think in Japan they have good devices for surfing the web.
But it's hugely popular in Japan.
How do they do it?
Well, it's not necessarily just internet access. It's communication, like it's messaging.
Yeah, instant message and, I mean,
well,
and texting.
Well, it's internet access, it's not web access.
And email. Everyone's doing that. I've been doing that.
Except that in the U.S., at least from my point of view, if you go past 6 months or a year ago, the text messaging plans were noticeably expensive. If you go further back,
it was astronomical.
And in a lot of other countries, they became, if you were on the same network as someone else, it's unlimited texting. That's what I remember seeing in Japan.
It still cost me 10 cents every time you send me a message, Miles.
Yeah, whatever. I've already paid you.
Yeah, you owe me another dollar. Okay, so does that going to affect these business models, these networks, as more users become mobile on them?
It's not going to affect the business models, except that there's going to be more usage. There's going to be more pages that are being viewed, which means more space that you can sell ads against.
See, we keep on going back to these ads, and it's interesting. I think that I would pay a little bit of money on my MySpace account, even though I don't use it very often, just to have all ads removed and to know that I'm doing it without kind of cheating the system. Because, of course, I could do that from a technical perspective. I could probably just make that happen, but some code and such. But I'd kind of like to, maybe, $10 a year and no more ads on MySpace. Would that work for them, or are they making a lot more money on those ads?
Well, it does make some money for them. For instance, I love Yahoo Launchcast Radio. I love it. And I hate the ads on it. So I pay to not get the ads. But that only brings you so far in terms of money. I mean, the great thing about advertising for the big companies is that it scales really well. You really scale up to hundreds of millions of dollars really quickly. And you can't do that with subscriptions or premium payments or fees. And that's why they really focus on the advertising. And for us users, it's, of course, not such a nice thing because we all hate ads.
Yeah.
It's just simply the fact that most users hate paying for services even more.
So why aren't they offering a thing that they go to their customers and say, you know what, our revenue off of ads is this much, and if you want to pay a subscription fee that will remove all the ads, I mean, technically it's not that hard, and just offer it to everybody so that you can remove those ads by paying them.
Well, you may actually see that in the future on many services. I doubt you'll see it on MySpace or Facebook simply because these are services that live off of the fact that they have such a huge reach. They want to be as open as possible, so anything that could sort of drive away users, even if it's optional to pay. Just simply the fact that there's a dollar amount on the homepage somewhere.
That would be offensive.
Yeah, so that's why they're probably not going to do that.
I would also imagine that if they did offer a service saying we can get rid of the ads on there, that someone's just going to release a Firefox extension that does exactly the same thing. Why are you paying for this? You can have it for free.
Okay, there already is Firefox extensions to get rid of ads, right?
Right.
So ad-aware.
So are people doing that on MySpace? That's the next thing that it obviously goes to. I know I can plug in to get rid of all my ads on most sites. I don't know about MySpace because it'd be a little trickier, but because they all serve the same things. But are people doing that? Would they know?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. If they know, they're not telling anybody. They're not complaining about it. Miles brought up a point about real and unreal and how you didn't count Second Life, because in Second Life you really do have a different life than your primary. It's like a role-playing game.
It's like a virtual parallel universe, if you
right,
want.
Right. And so therefore it's not totally related. But Miles' argument, of course, that fits very well is that, well, anytime you represent yourself in a different way, to some degree, you're altering who you are. You're kind of producing another identity. On MySpace, everyone gets an account name, and that's how they're known by, to some degree, and that's not necessarily their name. So there is a bit of that going on. The other thing that's, and the other thought I had about this is a company, especially let's take a band, for example, they have an image that they maintain of who they are, and that's not necessarily truth. That is a marketing idea so that people will buy their music. And if they make a MySpace page that talks about the band in this way that they always advertise the band, that's not really talking about those people as individuals. It's talking about a made-up entity that has a certain, you know, image. So how do you see these lines diverging? Does it matter to you very much, or how does it matter from a
launch? Or even an extreme example, World of Warcraft. People spending inordinate amounts of time on there and an economy growing off of that.
And there is a social network. I mean, you know people. You just don't know them as their
social.
Real names.
Yeah. That's the power of it. That's it, because it's social.
So why aren't you counting those?
Well, first of all, I think Miles has a point. I think the transitions between different kinds of services are sort of fluent and gradual. But for analysis purposes, you just have to cut off somewhere. And then our cutoff point was where we said, well, this is actually a service that has been designed to create a whole virtual world that's separate from the real world, and that's where we cut it off.
Okay. For those of us that don't use the web at all, that still listen to Geek Speak, I'm sorry, because we've gone through pretty much the entire show talking only about social networkings. We haven't actually even taken any calls, which I think is the first time without some other reason for years. So kind of shocking. But if you'd like to call us up and ask us questions about social networking, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. The reason I brought that up is, why is social networking so important? Why is there so much hype behind it? What if there's not a lot of revenue happening necessarily? Why is it so exciting in the news?
Well, all the companies are, of course, always looking for new ways to make money, and obviously they think they can make money with services like that. But the truth is that at this point they're not, which doesn't mean they will never. But they are only beginning to learn how to monetize these services, and there's still a lot of learning to be done before they are actually making a lot of money.
How many people are using MySpace? Do you know?
What I can tell you is that they have over 185 million user accounts, which means that they have well over 100 million users, which is a lot. Yes.
Though I know some people that have a couple accounts because they weren't able to close things.
Yes, that's why I say user accounts versus
right, users. Real people. And in this demographic, I mean, what's the major demographic that are using these? What age ranges are using these?
Well, all these services slant towards a younger demographic, so it's mostly kids. But the older users, let's say 25 plus, are now also joining the fray. So Facebook is a great example. It used to be just college kids. Now it's open to anyone. And they get a whole lot of new older users too now. So a lot of professional users join now. And they might eventually actually threaten LinkedIn as the major professional network.
You think so?
Yes.
Oh, because they're getting a younger group first.
Well, because now they get the older professional users too, and they can organize themselves on Facebook. So for instance, there's an IDC interest group on Facebook, and we can use Facebook to network with other users too.
Wouldn't Facebook starts doing that successfully, wouldn't LinkedIn start doing the same service?
Well, they're already offering a professional service, but so far, what we always said was nobody's ever going to threaten LinkedIn. But it looks like Facebook could eventually threaten them.
From Berkeley, Maureen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, I just wanted to say that when I'm listening to this stuff about social networking, I'm getting quite worried. Worried because all this money, make more money now, more, now, is getting, you know, it's going away from the communities. It's just going toward the corporate sector. And at some point, I'm afraid what this is going to do is to make our communities go bankrupt, actually, you know, and there's no more money. It's all in the corporations.
Well, I think it's a, first of all, Maureen, I think it's a valid concern to say that, well, this is all money driven, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I think that's a very valid concern. On the other hand, that's the world we live in, sadly. That is that these, some, at the end of the month, somebody's got to pay the rent and the bills, so they need to make money. And on the user end, we get all these services for free. So, for instance, Google provides a whole lot of utility, and it's free, and that's great. And but I hear your concern about everything being money-driven, not necessarily being a good thing.
And I think that certainly consumers need to be critical about not living in that world so much anyway, and only doing what's absolutely necessary to be doing those ways. And because you bet corporations aren't going to draw any kind of lines. They make as much money as they can, and that's the only goal.
I'm curious. Do you see a fundamental difference between the advertising and the like on social networking sites and the advertising on broadcast television?
No.
All right.
But I think the
same issues are in your head.
The same issues, but I think that the extent of this and the way it's taking off is potentially, you know, it's so much greater.
How do you see it damaging your local community, like in Berkeley?
The effect may not be totally direct, but I see it damaging it that if I spend more time and doing all of this and on those sites, of course, you know, I'm not out in the community doing something else. That's one effect. But I think it's indirect. It's like more and more money is withdrawn, and money is in the profit, for-profit sector versus in the non-profit sector.
It's an interesting idea. Carson, are there some nonprofits doing social networking?
Yes, there are a couple of services that are run by nonprofits. For instance, there's some church services where it's a Christian social network, essentially, where you can, like,
and the church is paying for it, and it's under a nonprofit,
it's free,
umbrella.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's still, you're at your computer and you're not in your community.
You're not in your community.
Well, assuming you're not using a cell phone, assuming you're not using some portable device.
Well, I think this has been a growing concern that people spend a lot of time sort of in the virtual world rather than going out and meeting real people or people in the real world. On the other hand, one interesting thing about the social networks is that what we see is that our society is growing more and more fragmented. Families are falling apart more and more. We're more and more mobile. We move more often. And social networks actually help to maintain contact with your loved ones. So they sort of help you offset the negative effects of this fragmentation.
Maureen, thank you so much for the call. And Carsten, thank you so much for being here today. We're out of time on Geek Speak as we are every week, but I really appreciate you coming to Santa Cruz for San Francisco and being on Geek Speak the second time now. I hope it's continued because you're a wealth of information. Carsten Vida, his most recent report from IDC is titled, my goodness, Social Networking Services in the United States, Popular Yes, But How to Monetize Them. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Geek Speak is boarded by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. The Geeks of the D were Sean Cleveland, Ryder Brooks, and Miles Elam. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.